Let me first recap quickly what we did last time for this. So I remind you, last time we studied essentially what is a toy model for inflation. This is a De Sitter space, and we did it in the flat slicing, and we essentially obtained the modes in the De Sitter space in general here for the massless case and then the massive case. Okay, where the massive case is this Hankel function with this order parameter here. Okay, which often we approximate for small mass range like this. So we expand it into this quantity here. And the most important thing is, you get this scale invariant power spectrum for phi k here. It goes like h square over k cubed. And this is in the regime where k eta, these two equations are in the regime where k eta is much less than 1. Okay? And this was the case here for the massive field. Okay? All right. And just to remind you again, if you go and calculate in real space, what this is going on, let's do the massless case here first. You find that, well, this is the integral dk. Do I want to just skip some? Yeah, dk k squared. You can integrate over angles right away. Then it's h squared over k cubed. So the statement that we get a scale invariant power spectrum is a statement that at the end of the day, this is just h squared over 2 pi squared times something which is essentially the same power per logarithmic interval. So it's d log k here. Okay. So this is what we mean by scale invariance, is dk d k. Okay. This is supposed to be integrated from 0 to infinity, and it's divergent in both ends. But essentially, if you imagine that there's a beginning to inflation, and if you put a cutoff for the uv part, then you find that this should be growing like log of the scale factor, A. Okay. Or h cubed t if you write it in terms of time. H cubed times t over 2 pi squared. Okay. Now, so the key physics here is that what you should think of is, so this is saying that if I look at a time t of order 1 over ah, call this one bubble time. Okay. If the scale factor is e to the ht, this is really saying that during one bubble time, the scale factor grows by a factor of e. So we call this one e fold. Okay? This is only one e, this is with the definition of an e fold if h is exactly constant. So if a grows by a factor of e, this log is just 1, or this thing is just, this whole phi square is just h square. So what we find is that when you put a scalar field with zero mass in the center space, it acquires a variance, which is of order h over 2 pi squared. Okay? So the field itself has fluctuation. Phi has fluctuations, delta phi, which is of order h over 2 pi. This is a statement, okay, that's sort of the key things to remember here. All right, so this is what we did last time. Is there any questions about this? Or I don't know if you started the homework question in general about cosmology in general, time evolution, St. Pat's Day, whatever. Okay. So today what we're going to do is we're going to go beyond this toy model of the De Sitter space. And we'll start going to slow roll inflation. And I'm pretty good on the in terms of time, in terms of the syllabus. So just if you want to plan, is today we're going to indeed do homogeneous inflation and start perturbation. Tomorrow we'll do more of the perturbations, and eventually we'll connect them to the CMB power spectrum. All right, so let's start with our more realistic cosmology by reviewing very quickly the Feynman equations. So the idea is now we're going to consider a system whose action is just standard. Now we're putting gravity. So I'm going to have m Planck square. First time ever, I think, that I have m Planck. It's going to be a very important constant, obviously. So m Planck is appearing now in this course. So m Planck is here, m Planck square r, plus then some matter part, or write it Lagrangian. Yeah. Lagrangian density, or if you want, plus Lagrangian of matter. Okay. And it could be any matter. I don't need this guy here. Okay. So this is our action to start with. And we want to consider a background, which is still has this FRW form of the metric. And by the way, sometimes this in Planck square, my definition here is that it's 1 over 8 pi g newton. Which, and sometimes I'll set it to 1, although actually I find it useful to keep track of it, because we will have two mass scale. There'll be the Hubble scale, and there'll be the M Planck. So, and this is the reduced Planck mass, right? So 10 to the 18 GeV, not 10 to the 19 GeV. It's better Planck mass. Reduce Planck mass. Okay, because I'm just putting the factor of 8 pi in there. Right, so we're looking at a metric like this. And so you can calculate the Ricci scalar for this metric. It's just 6h squared plus a dot dot over a, where the h is, again, as always, a dot over a. And then the idea is that we consider this metric, and we'll consider the case where T mu nu, the stationary tensor, which is just minus 2 root of minus g derivative of the matter part of the action. And we want to consider the case where this is a perfect fluid. Okay. So I think you've seen this. I'm hoping this is a bit of a review from what you've seen in Nathan's class. But the point is, I want to do inflation, so I need to remind you of basics. Basic of the Friedmann equation. So yeah, so this is a perfect fluid, which means that I take the stationary tensor to have the form where it's rho p p p, and all of these guys are function of time. Okay, let's write it all as a function of time. Yeah, that's bad notation. Okay, all of these guys are function of time. I can put it here. Not a function of space. Okay. And so it's a perfect fluid, and also often we use the equation of state p equal omega rho. Okay, I hope that you don't get confused with my p's and my rho's. Okay, so this is the equation of state. Equation of state, which, given a fluid, they will have different omegas here. So we don't have to do, if you want a universe which is truly isotropic and stays isotropic, then you should consider a perfect fluid like this. If it has cross terms here, then you'll develop true evolution. You'll develop other parts of this metric here. So it has to be in this form, essentially. Right. OK, so the equation of motion, there's only two. If there's one fluid, there's only two. So let's assume for the moment just one fluid. Assume one fluid. And so one component, say just radiation or just matter. Then the equation of motion is just Einstein's equation for one part. A pi t mu nu. Which I guess I could put the M thing there. Then d mu t mu nu equals 0. So this is just Einstein's equation. This is conservation of energy, conservation of stress energy, momentum tensor. And so this lead to the Friedmann equation, which you should have seen. So I'm not going to rederive this, but it's just 3h squared and Planck square equal to rho. And this one leads to the continuity equation, rho dot equal minus 3h. Rho plus p. Okay. And this fully describes the system if we only have one fluid. These are the complete equations of motion. Okay. Right, that you've seen this before, right? Okay. One of the thing a useful equation often is just to calculate this quantity minus h dot plus h squared. You see that when you do this, actually, if you just take h to be a dot over a here, this ends up just being a dot dot over a square, or no, just a. And then you can use, this is not an independent equation, I can just take a derivative here with respect to time and replace rho dot by this. So when you, so this is not an independent equation, you can just figure it out from the first two, and it's just equal with minus a 6 rho plus 3b. All right, so this is the basic of Freeman equation, and so you remember from your last class that a couple of fluids which are interesting is the case where you have radiation, in which case omega is 1/3, and the scale factor goes like t to the 1/2, or eta, if you write it in terms of scale factor, h goes like 1 over t, and a dot dot is less than 0. So I'm just giving you all this. You can just check it yourself in the Freeman's equation, and it's just as a review. So do you remember, this is the important. A scale factor goes like square root of t, goes like eta, and this is one of the things you'll do in the homework this week. And then Hubble goes 1 over time, so it's as time increases, the Hubble is decreasing. And a dot dot is negative, because if you just put this equation of state in here, you'll see that a dot dot is negative. So this is a decelerating universe. So this is radiation. So there are little photons. So that's one, right? Then the second one is matter, in which case omega is 0. And then you have the scale factor goes like t to the 2/3, which goes like eta square if you write it in terms of conformal time. Hubble, again, goes like 1 over t. And again, a dot dot is less than 0. Yeah, you just put different things. And then the third case is dark energy, or it's going to be essentially inflation here, is when omega is minus 1. Then that one is a bit different, because when rho is equal to minus 1, then rho is constant. Oh, I should write, actually. Sorry. Maybe another piece of data here that's interesting is the rho. So rho radiation goes like 1 over 8 to the 4, and rho matter goes like 1 over 8 cubed. So for dark energy, you find that A essentially goes like, say, an exponential. H is roughly constant. Rho is roughly constant. If it's, and then A dot dot is greater than 0. Okay? Questions? What does it say? About this guy?
No. Yes.
Equation of state. So this is my equation of symbol. So this is the equation of motion. This is the equation of state. Yeah, this is my symbol for equation of motions.
You say rho and h are approximately constant, but they are constant indeed. You have these two events there. Is it equal to a constant?
Well, it depends. We don't know. If omega is exactly equal to minus 1, I think your question is right. If this is an equal sign, then this should be an equal sign.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but dark energy, we really don't know if it's exactly minus 1. If it's a cosmological constant, then it is exactly minus 1. But if it's not a constant exactly, then, and during inflation, it's not going to be exactly a constant. Mm. Yeah. So I'll put the twiddle here, then the twiddle over there follows. Good? Do you want to go here first? Sure. All right. Another thing I should mention quickly is curvature. I was never really honest when I said this is the most general metric. Of course, if it is isotropic, it is homogeneous, but it is flat. You could have chosen a curvature, we could have chosen a metric which is curved. So again, you should have seen this, but just remind you, you can include curvature pretty easily in this in the Freeman in this metric plus r square d omega 2 square, where k is a curvature, and you can always rescale this to just be a number, either 1, -1, or 0, and this would be a closed universe, an open universe or a flat universe. Actually, Matt will discuss later, actually, the open inflation models are also very important in cosmology. Closed, we don't see very often, but open and flat are a good case. And once you include curvature, really the idea is then this equation here is modified. Well, Einstein's equation is modified. This Friedman equation here is modified. I mean, this one is still like this, but the resulting Friedman equation is modified. So see, you get a new Friedman equation if you want. New Friedman equation. Equation, which is just 3a squared and Planck square plus k squared over a squared, or k. Yeah, k, sorry. Equal to rho. Okay. Where rho is the rho total if you have multiple fluids. Okay. And so just the quick summary here is that if I have multiple fluid, then the Friedman equation becomes something like there will be a radiation, which goes 1 over A4, put a constant here. There will be a matter, which goes 1 over A3. There will be essentially curvature in general, which should go 1 over A2. So you can put this on the right-hand side and consider it as a component of the universe. And then there will be a constant, say, cosmological constant here. Okay, so this is dark energy. So this is radiation. This is matter. This is curvature. And this is dark energy. Okay. Okay. And essentially the statement of flatness and the statement of monopole problem, the fact that inflation solved these two problems, is the statement that if I have a long enough era of where this term dominates over these three terms, then the scale factor will increase very quickly while this is going to stay constant. And so you can solve, you can get rid of matter and curvature using, you know, an early era of dark energy. Of where of dark energy dominated the universe. Or dark energy-like dominated universe. And getting rid of matter is really, and curvature is really, that was the original problem with the Big Bang. The original Big Bang scenario, you need to start the universe with radiation, and then you need to somehow set these guys to zero for some reason, like by hand, which is a tuning, because these guys, if they're not zero, they will come to dominate over this one. And so you can solve these two problems by saying, well, let's first have an early era of dark energy, or of inflation. That will get rid of everything, because this guy will eventually dominate, and these all go to zero as time goes to infinity. And then the idea is then we just need to somehow have a process at the end to convert that back to radiation. Okay, so we need a process. We'll need a process at the end of inflation. So get rid of matter with a dark energy dominated universe. This is going to be our inflation era. So, and then we have a process at the end where we'll take this lambda and we'll convert it back to radiation. Okay, and this is called re-eating. It's a bad name because really you could say this is the first time the universe was eaten at all. But it's called re-eating. Anyway, so this is when the inflation ends and you transfer the dark energy into radiation. We won't discuss very much in this class this process. It's actually not very constrained by data. We don't have very good ways to test how this happens. It's possible to come up with models that do it, and we just don't have very good ways to experimentally verify whether our theories are right about this. So the reheating era is a bit, I mean, it's one of those things, it works in theory, but we just don't know experimentally exactly how to test it even. So anyway, so this is the reheating, lambda will go to radiation, and it's important that in the reheating era, you don't reintroduce, well, curvature is kind of hard to reintroduce, but you can imagine that lambda decays to matter. If that would happen, then you would not have solved the monopole problem. You would not have solved, because you would start with a matter-dominated universe, and you would never have CMB, you would never have BBM. Okay. So it's important that this reheating process goes like that. All right, so start here. Let's now discuss a little bit more about horizon and flatness. So I talked about a little bit about flatness here in the monopole problem. Let's talk about the horizon. Horizon and flatness. You will do more of this in the tutorial tomorrow. So let me define the co-moving horizon, which is essentially just the proper times for a photon. Okay, so it's just the time a photon travels in our universe from time t equals 0 to some final time t. Okay? So this, let's call it just tau, is the integral from 0 to t dt prime. Then you have over a t prime. You just have the scale factor in there. So this is the definition just of our commoving horizon. I can rewrite this in terms of scale factor, dA, h over a square from 0, dA prime, to a. Or I can rewrite this in terms of log of a also, 1 over h a. Okay, prime just for my dummy variable. All right, so this is just a definition. This is, but it's a very intuitive definition because it's telling you how much these things are in causal contact. This is the time. This is the farther distance. Maybe I should use distance. Sorry, let me use distance here instead of time. It's distance a photon can travel given this range of time. It's the farthest that the photon can go. So this is telling us how much things are in causal contact. No questions? Yes? Yeah, I'll come back to this later. This is somewhat of a preview. But this is reheating. And the statement I'm making here is that if I have an error, inflation is an error where essentially I'm dominated by a term like this, a dark energy dominated term. Then during inflation, this doesn't grow in time. And this stays constant while A grows. So all of these guys goes to 0. Then at the end, I have to recreate standard Big Bang. So I'm going to need to transfer this back to normal stuff. And so this is the process here where lambda will go back to radiation. We call this process reheating. Okay? And it's important that you don't recreate the monopole problem. By producing too much matter at the end of inflation, by producing too much matter, and too much is actually not very much. You really almost want to produce nothing. By producing too much matter at the end of inflation. Sorry, this is small here. Okay. Don't recreate the monopole problem by producing too much matter at the end of inflation. Okay, so this is a constraint on this process called reheating, which we won't discuss much in this class because I can just tell you that it can be done. This is not something that's so challenging theoretically, and we don't have much experimental handle on this phase in cosmology. So we just assume that it happens and cross our fingers, you know. Right. So this is the particle horizon. Or other questions? All right, so let's call 1 over h the co-moving bubble radius. And let me plot that. Let's say as a log of a, as my time, so this is just a time here. This is not a plot which is particularly to scale. And this, let's take this to be some co-moving length. So lambda co-moving. So I'm going to consider a perturbation with a wavelength lambda in co-moving coordinates. Okay, and let's take a perturbation with a fixed lambda. Okay, so perturbation with lambda. So this is a fixed co-moving lambda perturbation. Okay, so I have a perturbation in the, say, the metric with some physical length, some co-moving wavelength number. Okay, and let's take that to be fixed. Then the idea is we want to look what happens and with the co-moving double radius. Okay, so during the radiation or matter era, during radiation or matter, which is what most of the, which is most of cosmology was, well, the scale factor went like t to the 1/2 or 2/3, depending, while the h went like 1 over t. Okay. So there's 1 over, so what I get? So I get 1 over a h actually will go like some positive power of t. So this actually increases as t goes to zero, goes to infinity, sorry, plus infinity. Okay. So this is an increasing, radius. So it's an increasing distance. So the statement is that when you're in a radiated or matter-dominated universe, you see more and more stuff. Stuff are going to be more and more in causal contact with you. Okay, that's because the universe is decelerating its expansion, and so more and more stuff is, you know, coming in, if you want, or co-moving Hubble radius here. So that means that in standard Big Bang cosmology, this would just increase like this. So this is 1 over ah. Yes? No, without having inflation. Good. Sorry. Let's call it SBB. And this is just means you have a Big Bang singularity when a is 0. But then after that, a goes like t to the 1/2 for radiation, and it suddenly goes like t to the 2/3. So it's an FRW metric where the scale factor is essentially a power law that has a transition from 1/2 to the 2/3. But the 1/2 here, if you take t all the way to 0, you get a singularity, and it's the Big Bang singularity. This is the original Big Bang model. So yeah. But it's not working, right? So we'll have something else. But yeah, so this is this phase here where this is radiation, say, and this is matter, and really there should be, this line should not be exactly straight because it changes between radiation and matter, but let's not worry about that for the moment. This is radiation or matter era. Okay, I call it the standard Big Bang, but whatever. It's just a name. Right, so the problem is, so when lambda is greater than the co-moving, so when this line is above this line, things are not in causal contact. So here, we're in no causal contact between this perturbation and ourselves with our co-moving Hubble. And then here we enter, and then here we have causal contact. So that is, once this perturbation entered the horizon here, the Hubble co-moving horizon here, then it can influence things causally. Before that, it cannot have any influence because the wavelength is bigger than the universe we can see. Okay? So the trick and the horizon problem is the fact that if I look today, let's say, so this is T naught today. So I look at the perturbation and let's say this is CMB. So let's say I look today and I look at a perturbation and it's in causal contact, it's doing all its stuff, it's creating galaxy clusters and everything. But I look far in the past and it looks like this was never, there were no causal contact here because this guy was bigger than the horizon at CMB scale. And in fact, if you go farther in the past, it looks like, you know, the larger scale were never in causal contact, so it's hard to explain. The horizon problem is just saying, why is the CMB the same on all, you know, in all directions when actually look at some wavelength, they were not causally connected in the past. So this is another way to rephrase the horizon problem. So the way to solve this is imagine that now instead of having in here with a singularity, have an era before radiation domination where we are inflating. So in an inflation era, H is roughly constant, and the scale factor is growing quickly, exponentially quickly. So 1 over AH is going to 0. It's going, it's decreasing. Okay? It's decreasing as t goes to infinity. Okay? So that means that I should draw another line here. Again, this is not supposed to scale, and I'm not sure of the slopes, but I should draw another line where during inflation, the 1 over AH is going down. Oh, sure, I'm sorry. What's on the y-axis here? Oh, yeah, okay, I see, yeah. Sorry, this is lambda co-moving. Sorry about that. Try to be a bit bigger. This is the problem. I'm trying to do a plot which is, like, rich and stuff. So now I'm camping it. I'm going to do another plot, so it's going to be a bit cleaner. I'm going to go, this is such an important graphics, actually. This is such important that you, this is like, if you understand this, then, you know, you essentially understand all the physics of horizon and everything. So I'm going to redo it in a minute using slightly different. I'm going to use physical instead of co-moving, but it's essentially the same thought. But let me add one more thing to this before I clean it up and rewrite it again. Yeah, so inflation is the co-moving Hubble radius is decreasing, and then inflation ends, and then you start radiation. Then it increases, it doesn't matter. Okay? And then you have a fixed co-moving perturbation. What happens is that at very early time, lambda is less than the Hubble radius. So here we're causal again. This is causal, and this is not causal. Okay, not so here. So if you take a fixed perturbation, what happens is that it's inside the Hubble radius. And so it's doing its thing, and it's being amplified. You know, it's getting this growing mode. So you have a perturbation in here. It's growing. Then you reach this point here, just called horizon crossing. We already discussed about this context of the sitter. This is when the co-moving wavelength is equal to the co-moving radius, or if you, I'll rewrite it in terms of, I mean, you can rephrase this in terms of physical. So this is when horizon crossing occurs, and then after that, the wavelength is bigger, the co-moving wavelength is bigger than the co-moving radius, and then you don't have causal contact. It's not causal here, it's just the wavelength is bigger than the whatever. So light cannot affect this perturbation anymore. You cannot, by sending any signal, there's nothing you can do to change this perturbation anymore. It's outside of your light cone, if you want. You cannot change anymore what's going on with this perturbation. And then there's a new time here, which is horizon reentry. So I have this perturbation. It's outside of our Hubble radius, co-moving Hubble radius. I cannot change anything about it. But then the standard Big Bang, you know, starts, radiation and matter. We are decelerating universe, so more and more stuff is coming back in our horizon. And in particular, this perturbation, which was created during inflation, is coming back in. And eventually, we see it. So after a long time, essentially 13 billion years, you create something at inflation, then you have the standard Big Bang, which is pretty long in terms of years. You know, you have a long history. And then suddenly, this perturbation, which was created a long time ago, is back in our horizon, and it's doing things again. This is such an important graph that let me rewrite it again. Cleaner. So log A again. But let's use physical scale instead of co-moving scale. Just a factor of A difference. Questions?
So how do we know that before inflation, all the perturbations were inside the Hubble radius?
No, that's a very good question. They could be. We don't know what happened before inflation. We can tell that if there is a couple of e-folds of inflation before what we need, essentially, I'll make this more precise, you tend to erase memory of stuff because it's a very powerful homogenizer. So if there's particles or there are perturbations or black holes or what, you know, they could be anything out there. We really don't know how the universe really started. But inflation is a very powerful paradigm because even if you start with crazy stuff at the beginning, even if there was a really nice cool wormhole, well, it's been inflated away. And so you don't see it. Other questions? Okay, so physical scale. Then what happened is during inflation, then instead of writing the commoving Hubble radius, let's just write the Hubble radius, 1 over h. So, but during inflation, this guy is constant. And after, so here would be reheating, it's roughly constant, not exactly constant. If it was exactly constant, then that would be the sitter. And then reheating, and then h goes like 1 over t, or 1 over h goes like t, roughly like this. Again, I'm sorry, my scaling, log a here or t. Maybe I should use t. It's not, sorry. This is not supposed to be to scale. As long as you understand that it's increasing. Right, and then if I look at a perturbation, then it will again do the same. So if I have a co-moving perturbation, so lambda physical is lambda co-moving divided by A. Times A. Okay, let me write this bigger. So lambda co-moving times the scale factor is lambda physical. Okay. So during inflation, the scale factor is increasing exponentially. So you have a very quick lambda physical is growing. So the wavelength is being stretched very quickly, say like this, or this, say. And then after, when a reheating happened, maybe it's increasing a little too fast for my drawing here. So inflation increases very fast, but I have only a limited board to represent that. So let me write it like this, okay? And then reheating happened, and it starts going, it still increases. The wavelength is still being stretched. We're always in an expanding universe, so wavelengths are being stretched. So lambda physical, this A here is just saying that if I take a wavelength, it's getting stretched because the spacetime is getting stretched. So it's still expanding, but now it's going much lower compared to the other one, and it's always sort of plateaus like there. And if I look at a different scale, it will do the same thing like that. Okay. This is horizon crossing or horizon exit, horizon crossing. This is horizon re-entry. Okay, and this is for a fixed K mode or a fixed lambda physical. Fixed mode. I'm not saying that lambda physical is like fixed as a constant in time. I'm just saying, look at a lambda physical, look what happened to it as a function of time. So this is a very important graphical representation of what inflation does. If you have any alternative of inflation, you would have to explain the horizon problem by some kind of similar trick. And so usually all the alternative to inflation, you can write them as some other kind of curve here past the standard Big Bang. So you write the standard Big Bang and says, okay, now what happened to the Hubble radius? What happened to the co-moving Hubble radius such that you fix this horizon problem? And the beauty of inflation is it just takes everything in syncholytic contact, it stretches them out, so they don't talk to each other for a long while, and then they come back in. So it explains why the universe is so homogeneous. And the other key physical aspect here is the order in which the perturbations are coming back in the horizon. You notice that physical scale or scales, just scales doesn't matter if it's physical or moving, some scales, so perturbations on some scales that leaves first come back last. Okay? First to leave, last to arrive. It's the way to remember it. Okay? So these guys here, so this is time going forward like this. They left the horizon during inflation at this early time. They came back in at this later time. These guys left later, and they come back in earlier. Okay? The one that leave first, those are the ones that are the biggest. They're stretched the longest because they had more inflation and more normal expansion. They had more expansion all along. Okay, so before they start doing something, I mean, these guys also, it's just that once they re-enter here, they get expanded, but they also, a bunch of physics happen because now they're in causal contact, so matter and radiation will react with these perturbations, and so the evolution of this perturbation forward in time here is more complicated. Once it's outside the horizon, the only thing that can happen to it is it's just getting stretched, because we cannot affect this perturbation outside the horizon. So yeah, so small scale, the leaf first to leave, last to arrive.
I should have read it. So are you saying that after the person arrives, the moving
Well, I shouldn't have. I mean, we cannot do anything with it. But you remember the example of the massive field. Technically, the amplitude itself can decrease in time for a given mode. Of course, as with the massive field, even though the amplitude is decreasing for a given mode, you keep creating new modes. So new modes are exiting the horizon. But it's not true, actually. Things can decay on time. It's just not really. We cannot. It's like it's predetermined, if you want. It's not something that you can affect. You cannot change it, you know, by deciding, oh, I don't want this perturbation to grow or to decay. So things can happen to it because locally, it changes. But it's just not us that's affecting it. It's just the local space-time around it that's affecting it. So this leads to a very important thing which we see in the universe. It's called the hierarchical structure formation. Yeah, just a sec. Yes. The same way. So this is, well, except that really, this is not really a causal radius, but it sort of is. It's when you're outside of when this guy here is greater than this, you cannot really affect it. I mean, it's better the causal. The causal aspects is better in this diagram here, but this is the same really logic here. Roughly, it's exiting the horizon at this point, and so this perturbation is now outside of your horizon. Okay, it's just there. This is the physical radius instead of the co-moving one. But, does that answer your question? So this leads to hierarchical structure formation, which means that small structures are created first. Why? Because small perturbations enter first. All right, I'm gonna go a little bit faster. Cinnamon 15, right? Enter first. Okay. So small perturbation enter first, while the big ones, say the size of the universe perturbation, enter last. That means you're gonna get like Earth size blob of dark matter, say, before you get like galaxy cluster. So structure formation in the universe is more about conglomeration. How do you say conglomeration? Sorry, English here. Versus it's not fragmentation. Okay, it's like Google versus Romney style. You know, so it's more like small things are grouping together. small things group together, merge, group and merge. Okay. I really gotta move, sorry. I'm going a bit faster. Go first with this guy. All right. Okay, any question on this? All right, let's go to slow roll. So now let's take a specific theory in which we're going to do our inflation with. It's the same m Planck square r as before, but now let me write it as minus del phi square minus 2 v of phi. Okay, so it's a scalar field with a canonical kinetic term. So standard kinetic term and a standard potential. I will not specify the potential until I do an example later on, but it's just some potential. Okay. The equation of motion for this is 3h squared m Planck's rel equal rho again. So I'm considering this theory, and again, I'm considering with the metric is just flat FRW. And I will consider a solution where phi is only a function of time, not as in space. So I'm preserving the isotropy. Okay. So there's two equations of motion, the Freeman equation and the equation of motion for phi, okay, which is really, you can relate to the conservation of stress energy. We'll give you this. This is the equation of motion for phi. So in this background, this one here, so the box operator, remember, is just 1 over square root of minus g d mu square root of minus g d mu nu d nu of phi. Then minus or plus v prime of phi. So this is what this equation is, which if you write in this coordinate system, is plus 3h. Phi dot plus v prime of phi equal to 0. Okay, standard. So what happens is I have a standard scalar field and it has a friction term because of the expanding universe. And then you can work out where rho is by calculating the stress energy tensor. And this is just giving you the answer here. Rho is just 1/2, right? So this is just the equation of motion, varying the action respect to the metric, varying the action respect to phi. You get these two equations of motion. Another useful one, as before, let's calculate minus h dot plus h squared. Well, actually, I don't even need. Yeah, well, first. The best way to do this first is to calculate h dot. Okay. So I won't do this, but it's very easy. Take this. You take this equation, take the derivative of it, and you'll see that when you take the derivative of this respect to time, you'll get on the right hand side here, you'll get exactly this combination. Well, you'll get phi dot dot, and you'll get the v prime phi, and so forth. So then you can use this equation back in there, and you can solve for h dot. Okay, it's. I could do it, but it's really just two, three steps. Okay, so and you find a very simple relation is that this is phi dot square over 2 m Planck square. Okay, so these are essentially going to be our three basic equation. But remember that this one is really just a consequence of these two. All right, and then the slow roll. So this is the general system. You can solve it in general if you want. Sometimes it's hard. So what we do is we're going to solve it approximately. So we're going to define an epsilon parameter, going to be small, to just minus h dot over h square. Okay. And you can just plug in, given h dot here and h squared there, this is equal to phi dot square over 2 m Planck h square. And note that this is always greater than 0. It's a greater than 0 number. There are models of cosmology, not the slow inflation, where you can try to make this negative. But actually, this is, people are trying because this would be kind of, there's some cool cosmology you could do. But you can show that if you have anything that respects the null energy condition, which this definitely does, then this guy is always greater than 0. The variation of h dot. Essentially, it's saying h is sort of measuring the energy at the beginning. You know, h is really a measure of rho, the energy density. So if you respect some basic conservation of energy, you expect h to be decreasing in time. That's right. Thank you. Yep, sorry about that. Very good. At least what I say follows. Okay, right. So in particular, now I can go back also to this equation here. I minus h dot plus h was not an equation here, but I remember last time that minus h dot plus h square from the beginning is a dot dot over a. Okay. For an FRW metric. So I can rewrite this in terms of epsilon. I can take out h square here, and this is h square times 1 minus epsilon. I think I got my signs right. And so the idea to achieve inflation is just say, well, imagine that epsilon is less than 1. Then you'll find that, first of all, a dot dot is greater than 0. Okay. If epsilon is greater than 1, then this is the case of radiation and matter, then this is negative.
Shouldn't it be a plus?
In here?
In front of the epsilon?
No, there's a minus sign here. So this is. Do I have it reversed completely? It's minus in here. That should work. Sign mistake somewhere. Sorry, that's a good question. I think it should be this way, but I'm wondering. So h dot is going to bring us, let me check whether the sign is right. So a dot dot over a, sorry, it's going to minus. Right, actually, no, this should be a plus, and this should be a minus. I guess this should be a minus here. OK, sorry about that. Let me fix my sign. Relative sign is always a plus? Yeah. OK, I'll check this for next time. Sorry, I shouldn't have. Sorry about that. I'll check my sign. Yeah, I guess actually that's true. For some reason, I have minus in my head, but probably actually it's worked fine with a plus. But I should check. The case, anyway, so if a dot dot is greater than 0, I think got to get my sign right. And epsilon much less than 1 also means that h dot is really a constant. Okay. So this approximation here, h dot is nearly 0 if epsilon is very small compared to h. So h dot dot, the correct way to write it would be h dot dot is much less than h squared in magnitude. OK, so this is the condition for slow inflation. So h is nearly constant. So the solution will be almost exponential expansion. Okay. And so this is like essentially a minimum requirement you need in order to have an inflation error, is you need h dot to be slowly varying, which is this statement. Often we have another requirement, an additional requirement. And that ends up being essentially we want inflation to last long enough. Okay, it's easy to get one e-fold of inflation, so just one step in time, if you want, in double time. But to have multiple e-folds, which we actually need for to solve, for example, the flatness problem, it's a little. You need to impose more than just this. And the problem is, you see that for epsilon to be small, we need phi dot to be small. For phi dot to be small, we must make sure that it, if phi dot, let's say you set phi dot to be a small number, we don't want phi dot to grow to a big number. And so we need to be able to neglect this phi dot dot here. Okay, long enough. So we want to neglect phi dot dot should be less than 3h phi dot in the equation of motion for phi. Okay. Otherwise, phi dot is going to grow back, and then epsilon is going to be small, but for a very short time. Okay. So this is so we define a new parameter eta, say it's minus, so we just phi dot dot over h phi. Okay. And we demand that this is much less than 1, although, let me write it actually, eta magnitude is much less than 1, because now eta can add either sign. Okay, we don't know, there's no requirement. There's no requirement that eta is positive or negative. Okay, eta can have either signs. And just to often the slow parameter. Slow parameter are written in terms of the potential. And so let me denote these guys epsilon v, which ends up being the usual definition. And then eta v, which is okay, so these are the usual slow parameters. So it ends up that if you want h dot to be small, essentially you're asking for a potential v prime to have a low slope compared to v. So you want phi dot to change slowly, so you need a nearly flat potential. And then eta to be small, to say that it stays small, is just, well, not only do I require the first derivative to be small, I also require the second derivative to be small. Okay. This is roughly, if you assume that VH is nearly constant, you can show that this is essentially the same as the epsilon that I defined before. While this guy is roughly eta that I've defined before plus epsilon that I've defined, which epsilon and epsilon v are roughly the same. Okay, so this is the relation between epsilon v and epsilon and eta v and epsilon. So really, this definition is really essentially the same. If you assume v is constant, this is the correction to this relation is higher order in these slow-roll parameters, in these small parameters. And you see that this is just saying I'm reshuffling what's my small parameter, eta and epsilon, in between them. All right. Yes.
Because we want it to be smaller, much smaller than 3h phi dot, right?
Yeah. That's all. Yeah. Sorry. Sorry about that. Phi dot dot, yeah, it's just h phi dot. And you could put the 3 in there, but we're demanding smaller than 1, so sorry about that. Okay. Any other questions? Might be a good time to end. Yeah, I think it probably is a good time to end. Okay. No. Yeah. So I'll take any other questions. So next time we'll do an example, and then we'll start right away perturbing and doing the perturbation theory for this. All good? Okay. See you tomorrow.